Generations of daddy issues, ex-girlfriend issues, and of course the immortal slayers coming to kill everybody. That is what we're talking about today on the Killjoys After Show, and we have very special guest Derek Robertson who wrote the episode. We're talking season 4, episode 8, It Takes a Pillage. Let's go!
You're tuned in to AfterBuzz TV, the ESPN of TV talk. Now, let the buzz begin.
Take me home tonight, guys. Take Davin home as he escapes from the bounds of responsibility. He becomes a father. His six-day-old son, who looks like a 13-year-old who knows what happens in the future, something like that, starring Nicolas Cage from the film Next, Jack. We are talking about It Takes a Pillage, Season 4, Episode 8 of Killjoys. This is one of the most fun episodes this season, honestly. We get to go down deep into a bunker. We get to deal with old girlfriends from Johnny. We get to learn about Johnny and Davin's childhood a little bit more. And we get to experience more of Maurice Jacoby, which always gets them a little bit amped up, gets them a little bit messed up. I'm your host, Stephen Lemieux. I'm riding solo today. Shannon O'Connor is out of state. She's at a wedding. We couldn't do the show yesterday because I was feeling under the weather, so I'm glad that we're here today. But there is good news. We have special guest Derek Robertson, writer of tonight's episode, or this episode we're covering today, on the line. Robert, can you hear me?
I can. Thanks for having me.
I keep calling you Robert. I'm sorry, Derek.
That's okay. Robert's not a bad name, at least. It could do worse.
It could be. It could be Stephen Lemieux. That'd be terrifying. So first off the bat, how we're going to break this episode, guys, we're going to talk a little bit about Davin, Dad, and Jack. We're going to talk about Johnny and Dad, then Johnny and Davin, then Johnny and Charlie, who is played by Lara Jean Charstecki, and then Dutch, Zeph, and Lucy, followed up with Dutch and Davin, and some Jack speculation. It seems like a lot, but obviously we're just going to be touching on a lot of the stuff to kind of break down where these characters at and what we've learned about them today. First off, I want to talk Davin, Dad, and Jack. So, Derek, do you know which episode, when you were looking up to write this one, what was the last episode we saw Maurice Jacoby?
That was episode 205. It was written by our showrunner, Adam Barkin. And it was the first time that we'd actually seen Maurice and seen Telen. We saw, you know, the exterior of the planet. And then we saw the apartment building that Maurice lives in, but that was really the only taste that we've had of him in person.
So excitedly, now we are, God, like 20 episodes later, 23 episodes later, and we experience their bunker life, and we experience these storms. So Telen is now a planet that experiences silica storms. So I'm assuming it's like a industrial planet that mines a lot, and they've kicked up this silica, and it now becomes like these storms. Like, are we thinking more like Mars, like a red storm from Mars, kind of similar?
Yeah, like those massive storms that you see on Mars that are just devastating. I mean, thankfully, as Maris tries to explain to us how the storm works, he gets interrupted, so I didn't have to go too deep into the explanation. But the thinking was, in my mind, yeah, basically there's all this silica that gets kicked up into these almost like sand hurricanes. And they're provoked by the tidal effects of the rings around the planet too. So it just creates these horrible, deadly storms that will either, in an earlier draft, we got into a little bit more detail and we talked about how it would, you know, rip the skin off you in a few seconds. But of course you'd suffocate before you got to that point. So you definitely don't want to be outside for them, that's for sure.
Yeah, I'm now starting to think that Telen from Killjoys is just the future of the same planet where Mad Max Fury Road takes place, right? This is a shared universe, correct?
I can't believe you caught on to us. That was our big reveal eventually. So
that's what I thought. Yeah,
there you go.
Johnny's blood bag now makes sense that he's carrying around that bald guy. So talking about Davin, Dad, and Jack. So obviously we have a big amount of parallels here because Davin with his father, his whole relationship with his father was very flawed, and the past few episodes have been all about Davin worrying about him basically making the same mistakes with Jack. And obviously, when that's the case, let's make them all be in a room together and see what happens. And it doesn't seem to be helping very much in terms of Dad is kind of one of those old school father figures where he thinks he did the best he could. He says that he did the best he could, but really, like, he was an alcoholic and just has created these own memories for him where he doesn't really think about it from the perspective of the of his sons. And he's and he already starts getting into old habits of treating Jack just like he treated Davin in terms of dropping responsibilities on him that aren't necessarily supposed to be theirs. I'm curious what when writing this episode, why did you guys go with the tunnel? And let me just kind of rephrase this. I'm trying to get my thoughts together because I watched the episode and it's a lot to break down in terms of the relationships between these characters. But I'm curious how you guys first saw the relationship between Morris and Jack, because it is like a grandson grandkid relationship, but it's also like he's 13, so it's estranged and he thinks he was a good father, so he thinks that the things he did were good, so he's kind of treating Jack that same way. What were some of the basics that you wanted to get out of the way with these characters when you were writing this episode?
Yeah, I think Maris is kind of, that Jacoby confidence to a horrible extreme, really. Like, no matter what he does, he's pretty sure that he is the best at it, including being a father. So, when it came to being a grandfather, of course he wouldn't second guess, how he raised his kids, is just as good to keep doing with Jack. And then as far as Jack, going into the episode, the idea was that, basically, this is, somebody who has only been alive technically for a few days. And he's learning a lot about the world, but the one thing he doesn't know a ton about is where he came from. And so, of course, any taste of family, he's going to be really excited. So so you have somebody who's kind of world-weary and also convinced that he's right, running into somebody who is just excited and amazed at, every little thing as he explores this bunker. So it was a fun combination to write.
Yeah, and it definitely it plays off in that Davin comes off super overprotective this entire episode. I know that that's been kind of the theme for Davin's character for three episodes now, but as soon as Morris is involved, it really seems to the next level where, like, literally anything that Jack wants to do is a no. So I'm glad that we finally got the development to the end where we trust him with a gun and it's okay for Jack to actually be doing things now. I think it was really important to get to that point before this end of the season. And I'm glad we did it in a way that kind of made sense because mm-hmm. what works for me is as Davin is telling his dad all the things that he did wrong, he's not realizing all the things that he's currently doing wrong. So it's interesting to me that by the end of the episode, Davin rethinks his stance on how protective he's been of Jack and changes his stance as a normal father would in that situation. Aside from the fact of giving him a gun, normal fathers probably wouldn't do that. But
hopefully not.
But
maybe not sending him out to shoot at, but yeah,
against the immortal army.
But you gotta learn sometime, right? When I first pitched this story to Adam, and one of his first takeaways that he said to me, which it hadn't even occurred to me, was oh, like, this is our Killjoe's version of, like, Finding Nemo, and that really helped me frame it in my mind, because I'm like, yeah, this is like we've been talking for a bit now about Dav being really overprotective, and this is when he has to learn that, you protect your kid, but there's only so much you can do, and there's also a certain level of trust that you have to put into your children.
Yeah, and it's It was a good moment also at the end when he talks about like the spider grip thing where he got out of the handcuffs, because that also brings Dav and Dutch a little bit closer together in terms of, you know, yeah, Dutch has had a broken childhood. Dutch is teaching assassination techniques and all this kind of stuff. But having not had that, they would have had nothing. They, like, honestly, Jack wouldn't have been able to get out of that situation and would have been lost forever. So it's like in those situations, you have a character that's in a really dangerous situation that you can either be there 24/7 next to him to protect him, or you have to give him the tools to protect himself. So I think it's valuable that Davin's on one end learned to trust that what Dutch was doing was for a reason, and on the other end is less protective because he understands that Jack needs to protect himself now. So we do get that development, which is going to be probably crucial for the next two episodes.
Mm-hmm. And I have to say, just on that scene where he's walking out of the airlock, I love Jaden, the actor who plays Jack. I love his delivery of how he has to tell Dutch about doing the spider twist. It's one of my favorite moments in the thing, just as excitement.
The spider twist. Do you see, this is actually an interesting one, do you see Dutch as a mother figure for Jack?
That's an interesting question. I mean, I think the question is, and the question that we've discussed in the writing room is, does Dutch see herself as a mother figure for Jack? And I think that that's something that she's not sure about. She's not sure about what her place is with this child. I mean, none of them fully are, because, you know, it's all kind of been spoiled on them pretty quickly. You know, normally when you have a kid, you have a few years to use into the teenage years, but they've you know, been thrown headfirst into this. And so I don't know if Dutch is at the point where she sees herself as a parental figure to Jack, but it's definitely something that you know, that she's gonna keep running into, I think, because whether she does or not, it's kind of a position that she's falling into.
And then also with Dutch, we have, so with a lot of these characters, we're dealing with the whole the theme of broken father figures, in terms of, we have Morris with Johnny and Johnny and Davin. We have Klein with Dutch, because her childhood was not very good with the father, with her father figure, and now we also have Jack with Davin. Are we going to get a lot more development with the whole mother figure situation? Because it seems like a lot of things have been S flows downhill from the father side, but I'd love to see the S flow downhill from the Delsea side once. Because this episode alludes that we're going to be going to see Delsea. So are things going to be pretty just perfect with Delsea, or are we going to be dealing with the same stuff? Like, because I feel like she needs her own arc with Jack as well, if we're going to tie it down more as mother-son. But if we're not, then I'm interested to see where we go with that character.
Yeah, I think that definitely not only are you interested, but we're interested in the writing room to see what Delsea is like in sort of a motherly role, or at least having to, you know, I guess take care of Jack in some way. So where we're going to go, I can't really say, but I definitely know that we share the same interests. And I think that we're definitely going to get at least a little bit of a taste of it next episode.
Cool. So let's go ahead and talk about Johnny and Morris just a little bit. So Johnny and Morris don't have too much to really delve into. We get a lot of Dad basically calling Johnny like a silk pants in some ways, in terms of, oh, you just want to go travel the stars and drink, huh? You just want to get into trouble and drink. So it's interesting to me that the first thing Charlie says to Johnny when she sees him is, oh, I would have thought you would have been the first one to settle down. But then Dad is just kind of like upset that Johnny is, and doesn't believe that he's got a job, doesn't believe anything. So he expects even less of Johnny than he does of Davin. Is this the whole like kind of sheriff mentality? Is it, he's proud of Davin because he's a man of the army, and he's not really proud of Johnny because Johnny never really in his mind amounted to anything?
Yeah, I think the feeling coming into the episode was that Maris isn't proud of either of his sons, but then yeah, once he sees Dav and he sees you know, he sees him as this army guy who has grown into his view of, you know, I guess manhood or his view of being responsible. That kind of warms Maris to him quickly, whereas you get much more of a taste of how John was. I mean, how Maris was with not only John but with Dav as well. With Maris's dealings with John, he still sees him as the same kid that will, no matter what he does, whether he gets the power back on in the bunker, it's just not good enough. It's just not living up to these impossible standards that Maris somehow has put on his kids.
And we can see that in Johnny's character throughout, in terms of a lot of the wanting to be better that he has, and a lot of proving himself comes from that childhood that you've built for him. So it's definitely a character builder to put him in the same room as Maris again. Let's talk quickly about Johnny and Charlie. So Charlie Volford, whose decision was it to bring in a childhood crush to completely betray them?
That was me. That was me. I'm not saying I'm working through a few things, but that came from my mind. So when I originally pitched what I was hoping to write for the episode, Charlie was part of it right from the beginning. Just the idea of, we had talked a little bit about how it'd be fun to see some people from not just Maris, but some of the other people that Dav and John grew up with. And we had discussed a few different people, but the one that really seemed the most fun to dive into would be the childhood crush or the childhood sweetheart of John's.
And it seems that he's still got that same... It's interesting because it's kind of this whole... it reminded me of L.A. It reminded me of moving to L.A. and then, like, going back home and having everyone be like, oh, I would have thought you would have settled down already. Oh, and let me just betray you. Oh, I have two kids, and you're just out there exploring the stars looking for princesses. I mean, I feel like this was a direct correlation of, like, moving into the entertainment industry away from home with no basis for what your future holds, and your parents kind of being a little bit down on that.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I definitely was able to tap into that feeling of, you know, a lot of my friends that I grew up with have settled down, and I've definitely 100% gotten the almost a direct quote of, you know, oh, I would have thought you would be the first one to, you know, get married or have kids or what have you. So it hit home for me this episode. As far as that was a personal, I guess, a bit of a you know, I could put myself in John's shoes, which I always enjoy. I think everyone in the writing room has different characters that they connect to most, and you know, we all have our people, and for me, it's always been John throughout the whole series. So it was nice to explore some of that stuff through him.
It's pretty awesome. Like, I love that you guys have your own characters that you connect the best with. Speaking of that, when you're all figuring out who's going to write what episode, does that play into it? Like, do you guys kind of fight for which character arcs you want to play into more?
No, it doesn't. We don't figure it out so much that way. We kind of, right from the beginning, we have a couple of weeks where we come together and we discuss the whole broad arc of the season that Michelle and Adam have figured out. Michelle being the creator, Adam being the showrunner. And then we are kind of just assigned episodes based on where it makes sense in Michelle and Adam's minds to fall. So you're kind of, it's kind of the luck of the dice. And at the same time, you can definitely, you know, you can definitely pitch ideas that align with the stories that you're most excited to explore. But for me, I've always had a soft spot for the Jacoby brothers, and I've always had a soft spot for stories about brothers in general. And when we came in to start discussing season four, Michelle Nam told me that I'd be writing episode eight, and we weren't sure what episode eight was going to be at that point, but that they were hoping that it would be something that dives deeper into the brothers. And I was excited because that's exactly what I was hoping to get.
Well, it definitely came across that way. It came across in a very good way. Like I liked the end result with Johnny, Dav, and Morris. And I'm glad that I'm not sure we're ever going to see Morris again, because we only have 12 episodes left, but I feel like it left off where it needed to leave off.
Yeah, it was nice. I was, you know, I started on Killjoys in season two. So I was there when Adam was writing 205 when we first met him. And ever since then, I've been curious to see more of him. And I know Adam felt too that, you know, we hadn't totally finished his story. So it was nice to get to revisit him and get to learn a bit more about how he affected Dav and John for good and ill.
So let's move on a little bit to Dutch, Zeff, and Lucy. So while all of this is going on, we have Dutch, we have Lucy, who are hanging out in the clouds trying to get in contact with them. Meanwhile, Zeff comes in on the Star Wars hologram to talk to everybody, and Dutch basically explains what the decaying, or like what these are, basically shows Klein's weapon to her. And immediately Zeff finds out they're spores, but the spores are decaying, but also keeping their structure through G-force. I can't remember the name of the device.
The centrifuge?
Yeah, the centrifuge. So basically they try to centrifuge the spores to separate them so she can figure out what they're made of so she could create it herself. We find out the spores are basically retaining their quality throughout G-forces because Klein made them with spacery and delicious science. And basically we learn that the way to do it would be to use the gravity from the sun by raising the G-forces to a certain level while in the centrifuge. And Dutch decides, hey, that's a great idea. Let's use the sun. I liked the tossing salad joke. We got two tossing salad jokes this episode, and Zeff was definitely not a fan of them, which was disappointing to say the least. Because I feel like anyone would have laughed at those jokes.
That's true. But I guess, Zeff was all business at that point. She definitely was not, she was not there to have fun with Dutch, despite Dutch's efforts.
Yeah. Zeff's dealing with a lot though, because she mentions, Pip a little bit here. So basically we're still in the same position. She hasn't figured out how to save Pip. Pip has a spider in his head, and as most people with spiders in their heads, if the spider dies, they die. And mm-hmm. if they kill the spider, they die. So Pip's kind of got a really – he's got the ass end of the deal right now.
Yeah, yeah. And so that was something interesting coming into this episode, because we knew that we were taking Zeff off of what was most pressing for her. So just you know, in writing this episode, knowing that there's this thing that's weighing on her, that she hasn't figured out, that, I mean, that makes those scenes so exciting to write when you first start. And yeah, I mean, my only regret about this episode is that I didn't get to write anything for Pip because I love his character. So
yeah, he's great. But the back and forth between Zeff and Dutch was something we actually haven't seen too much before, because the last time we see Dutch and Zeff interacting, Dutch is basically threatening her to kill Pip. So it was good to see a little bit of a lighter note, but also to see Zeff in the background just freaking out in silence because Dutch muted her. What I'm curious about is, how did that work with heating up the pad? So is it something like she made the hologram like super bright? Like, how did that work?
Yeah, I mean, part of it was, so the idea was to do I mean, you've basically, yeah, you've hit the nail on the head. The idea was that she's so bright that she ends up heating up the pad to the point where it bursts into flames. And the original idea was that it would kind of filtered through a glass. I don't know if you noticed on the centrifuge, there's like this glass bubble. So the idea was she would put her beam of light through the glass bubble, and it become really focused, like going through a magnifying glass, and that would catch on fire. But logistically, that was too difficult, I think, to pull off. So so basically, Zeph is putting her hand over the pad to the point and turning up the brightness to the point where there's so much heat coming off of the light source that it bursts into flames.
Interesting. Okay, so we have light source based holograms as opposed to spiritual force based holograms, which makes sense.
Right.
So yeah. When you wrote in the decaying spores, this is to play into a time crunch then, correct? So I'm assuming they're not – I don't think Zeph's going to be able to recreate them. And if she can, I'm curious if this is going to really create a time crunch for the characters to create a level of suspense for they have to make a decision with these spores before they all decay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's something – I mean, that's basically something that we're going to find out next episode. But, you know, the spores are going to come back into play. And it's going to be an interesting episode for Zeph, who's, you know, such a fun character to watch, especially this season, because she has so much on her plate now with the spores and finding a way back into the green. And most pressing for her in a way, you know, Pippin and the spider in his brain. So it's all going to come to a head next episode.
Ooh. And next episode's the penultimate of the season. So we definitely have two more hours. And this is more of a question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but are the next two episodes very closely tied into each other, or do we have two different storylines going on for the penultimate and final?
Yeah. I mean, we're going to leave you wanting to fast forward a week by the time you've done nine. It's going to be one of those episodes where you just want to get to the next one. Cause they are, very closely tied.
Sweet. I'm excited. So let's finish this up by talking about Dutch and Davin. We have a really great moment with them this episode where basically Dutch explains that basically is pissed at him for leaving once and for all. But honestly, she's just like, she says, you thought I couldn't do better. And I think that was the line of the episode that really hit the hardest in terms of he just left without even giving her a chance. So I'm glad that he's back, and I'm glad that we added brevity to the situation, because that was one of those like very cinematic scenes that's like so serious, and it's like, I'm back. Are you back? Yes, I'm back. And then they just start laughing. It's like, I think this is the most serious, because we go from tossing salad jokes and Dutch's resolution, which is basically that she needs to stop beating herself up over her messed up childhood and realize that she can still find the light in the dark if she just trusts herself to be who she is, because I think what Davin said to her two episodes ago really has been affecting her for the past two episodes.
Yeah. And I think that's those two characters. And that's why I think at least us, you know, speaking personally, myself, that's why we love those two characters so much, because they can go from these serious moments to breaking it up, you know, and making each other laugh. When Dutch delivers her, you know, when she opens up to Dav and says that, you know, you didn't trust me, like every time I rewatch that scene, I don't know, it hits me. It's a really tough moment. And I don't know, to me, in my mind, you know, what I love about them is they feel so real, because in those moments in life, I feel like, you know, when you're having those kind of conversations, your natural tendency is to, you know, break it up, you know, with a laugh, I think. So that's kind of what I love about them.
So leaving off now, we have to talk about Jack a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack has these powers, and I'm curious, I know you can't really dive into the speculation with me too much, but it was very reminiscent of like seeing 5 seconds in the future. Like, he can kind of see how things will play out in his mind before they happen. And I'm curious as to whether these are memories or whether this is just like an algorithm in his mind, because my theory the other day was that Jack's a combination of AI and human, as the Green is technically a hyper-processing supercomputer that contains memories and contains all the experiences of everyone who's ever touched it. We get the Hullin calling him the firstborn. They say he's not human. You have no idea what he even is. And they say he's the firstborn. So we're kind of in a very new species, next level of evolution storyline here with Jack. Firstborn's usually what they use in vampire movies, so I'm assuming it's going to have some of those same kind of ploys for sci-fi with that in theme-wise. And I'm curious as to whether Jack can actually see what's going to happen, or if basically his mind is just like a super processing AI kind of thing that, using the experiences of his knowledge, like using his knowledge on physics, using his knowledge on fighting, uses his knowledge on the anatomy of people, he can predict the outcomes of things based on a probability equation in his mind before he does them. I'm curious what your thoughts are to the level of what you can talk about.
Yeah, I'm going to have to choose my words carefully here. But first of all, I have to say I love your theory. Whether or not it's true, it sounds awesome to me. I definitely, just to go back to what you were saying, is definitely where we were coming from, is that this ability that we see in Jack that we're going to, you know, slowly get a feel for, about him, being able to, see what's coming, it definitely comes from the fact that he is, tied to, the Green in a different way than we've seen, and because the Green, like you said, is built on these memories, that is definitely helping him figure out what is about to come. But as far as how it works, and that's something that Jack isn't even sure of at this point, and he's not sure exactly how to control it. We got the first feel of him controlling it there when he attacks that Hullin. And so he's starting to understand it, but there's still so much more for him to figure out, and so much more for us to see.
Well, I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to have Shannon back next week to see it with me. Doing a show a solo sometimes is a little bit difficult. I'm so glad that you could call in and be here with me, Derek, and help me keep the silence to a minimum.
Well, I really appreciate being on. We all really enjoy your show in the writing room, so it's a privilege for me to be a part of it. Also, I want to say I love the opening theme you had this week. I kind of wish that we had that in the episode now that I've heard it. Yeah, but we're all big fans of what you're doing, so thank you for having me.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, too. And if we're ever up in Toronto, I know Yell's been the one who heads up to Toronto more than us, but if we're ever in Toronto, it'd be great to visit you guys and actually meet you guys in person. I know that getting from L.A. to Canada is a little bit difficult sometimes, as you guys are on the East Coast, but it'd be great to visit.
Yeah, it's worth the trek. We look forward to seeing you up here.
So where can everyone find you on Twitter?
I am Robertson Derek, at Robertson Derek, I guess, on Twitter.
Guys, go follow Derek at Robertson Derek, R-O-B-E-R-T-S-O-N-D-E-R-E-K. And check it out, guys. Stay tuned for episode 9 and episode 10. Derek, I'm going to run through these pictures after we knock you off the line, but thank you so much for calling in, and I'm sure we'll have you on the show again.
Great. Thank you.
So let's get into these behind-the-scenes pictures really quick before we get out of here, guys. I just want to run through them really quick. You can find them on Derek's Twitter. It's pretty cool from the episode. It's a lot of props that you haven't really seen in the episode because they're all in the kind of the background of it. The first one you'll see, this is basically a Tellen street sign. These are from the Jacoby homeworld. Going down further, you can see another picture of that. You can see like the lake and everything, which is really cool. Moving forward, this was basically kind of the outside that they pictured for the planet and kind of the bunker and how it's like, see how it's all like degraded due to the storms and everything. That's that hatch that we see Charlie come through in the top of the bunker. Moving forward, you can see that they're pushing all the dust and stuff into the cameras for that with this, the silica storm with the big fans. Then if you move forward, you can see kind of how the dust is coming into camera for the small lake and the sign. Moving forward, you can see a picture from the script where it says Jack nervously walks through the dark tunnel, passing bunker hatch doors, vacation paraphernalia that the locals store outside their cabins, and some laundry on a makeshift line. And if you go to the next one, you can see that that's like kind of the hallway with the bunker, and you can see the clothing hung up on the lines, all the coolers and things like that. You can see more of these doors from the hallway with people putting like flowers and the what are those things called? The succulents. Moving forward, this is the opening hatch to the Jacoby bunker, which was really cool to see all these pictures. They've put in so many different like props and everything. They've really built it like it was where the kids grew up a lot. He was mentioning that there's like board games and stuff that they were supposed to have played in there. There's like things on the wall. You can see like a skulls on the wall from the sheriff hunting. If we keep moving along to the next one, let's go ahead right there. This is the one of the computers in the bunker, which is kind of cool. That's like reading the storm layouts. So it's like pretty sick. Going to the next one, you'll see all the skulls hung on the walls. And you can see a dinosaur skull that Derek kind of told us about. He said, hey, there's a dinosaur skull that we had to kind of make sure we glossed over so people couldn't tell it was a Triceratops or Diceratops skull. Then you can see that they removed the walls so they could shoot inside the bunker, which I thought's really cool. So basically all the walls are removable so they can get shots from the sides without having it be too cramped inside of there. And then you can also see that there's the hatch on a plank up top where people could enter and exit through for the camera crews. And then this is one with the camera crew inside the bunker. This is the last picture here. And it was a tight space, they say on the Twitter. Again, you can check all these out on the Twitter for Derek at Roberts and Derek. That's been our show for the week, guys. We will see you next week for Killjoy's season 4, episode 9. Let's see, it's entitled ba ba da ba. If the internet will load, it's going so slow. It's titled The Kids Are All Right. So I think we know what song we're opening with for that next episode. Guys, it's been your host, Stephen Lemieux, STPHENLEMIEUX on Twitter. And we will see you guys next week for the Killjoys After Show.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.